The book Open Socrates by Agnes Callard is a joy to read. She's very, very clever, but very easy to read, and she makes references to a whole lot of interesting works as well. I think it's almost, for me anyway, it's almost an education in contained in a single volume. But when I started reading the book, I was kind of wondering about myself. Am I more mad than usual? What's going on in my life? This is just crazy. I was thinking, there must be some reason for this that I'm interested in Socrates. I mean, come on. He was a contrary, difficult individual who caused a whole lot of problems everywhere he went. And even though we still read the stories told about him, nobody likes him that much, really. I mean, come on, he was really a difficult individual. And then in the introductory chapter, there's a whole lot about Tolstoy, another difficult individual. And then I got to thinking, when I was a teenager and was worried, frightened about the future, I read Solzhenitsyn. I read almost all of Solzhenitsyn. And then that phase went away and I read much more light-hearted literature. Then again, in my 30s, when I was finding life hard going, I read Tolstoy. I read most of Tolstoy. And was very glad when that phase moved off and I didn't have to face any more of Tolstoy and his real hard life. I mean, come on. But then, next stage in my life where I was possibly going through a period of fear, I read the Gospels. And the Gospels were quite interesting, not a bit helpful, but they were very interesting. And then, a couple of years ago, when the whole COVID thing was going on, I discovered Jordan Peterson. He got me through COVID to a large extent, after family and friends and the social supports. But it really cheers me up no end if I'm feeling worried about the state of the world or the state of my own life to turn on a YouTube video and have Jordan Peterson shout at me. He's just marvelous in his therapy. He speaks a lot of sense, but all of them do. I mean, starting with Sophocles, Solzhenitsyn, Tolstoy, Jordan Peterson, they have two things in common. They're contrary, difficult, middle-aged men. And second of all, they are very, very clever. They have a lot to say that we could perhaps benefit from. Now, perhaps to return to the main point, I called the address Listen to Socrates because Socrates didn't actually write down anything. We assume that he was a literate Greek and that he could read. He just didn't. He didn't read much and he didn't write much. He spent his whole time walking around the street, so far as we can tell, bothering people. And what we know of him comes down from the writings of seriously clever writers from a range of topics in ancient Greece. The first accounts of Sophocles' life come from Aristophanes' marvelous drama, Clouds, where he is portrayed as being a complete nightmare to have anything to do with. Xenophon wrote about Socrates, but most of what we know about Socrates and his thoughts come to us from Plato. So sometimes it's difficult to separate out Plato's thinking from Socrates' thinking. Despite his lack of writing down his life story, we know quite a lot about Socrates. He was born sometime around 469 BCE. His father was a stonecutter and his mother was a midwife. He was married, he had children, he had a place in Greek Athenian society. He was one of the well-off people in Athenian society. Lately he fought in the Peloponnesian War. Then in 399 BCE, he was charged by the city of Athens with impiety and corrupting the youth. He was tried, found guilty, and executed. So much for the bare bones of his story. But like Tolstoy, Socrates hit a crisis point in his life when he was confronted by profound questions that he just could not answer. But Socrates decided that rather than despair, that he would confront these questions and he reckoned that it was the best thing that had ever happened to him. He devoted his life to seeking answers for the hard questions in life, the why, the what for. And not only did he look for the answers to these questions for himself, but he insisted that everybody around him take up this crusade as well, whether they were interested or not. There is a story told about Socrates that his friend Chaerephon went to consult the oracle at Delphi, and he asked the oracle whether there was anyone wiser than Socrates in the world. And, much to Chaerephon's surprise, the oracle said no. So he came back to Athens and he related this to Socrates. He said, what do you think of that? There is nobody wiser in the world. And Socrates, he had a fairly balanced view of himself, and he knew he wasn't really that clever, and there were an awful lot of things he didn't know, so he was surprised by this. And he eventually came to the conclusion that the reason he was esteemed as being wise because he knew there were a whole lot of things he didn't know, and perhaps that's the start of wisdom, knowing that there are things you don't know. For myself, Gilbert is helping me with that every day. It's a reminder. Socrates was of the view that all our troubles, all our dissatisfactions, all our failings, all our failures to progress, our moral imperfections, are down to ignorance, that it's impossible for us to act against our own best interests. And if we but find out the answers to questions, become wise, all of our problems will disappear. And he challenged people from calling ignorance by other names. He wouldn't hear of people referring to lack of willpower, laziness, or even just plain malice. No. It's all just the same problem. It's all ignorance. And he also warns of the dangers of acquiring knowledge from unreliable sources. In this, he's having a poke at the Epicureans and the Stoics, because the Epicureans figure that all our good information comes from our bodies. Our bodies tell us what we need to know. Whereas the Stoics took the other view that we're social beings, and that if we need to respond to the society of which we are a part, and that society will nudge us into behaving and being the way we should be. The Socratic approach to life, the way to tackle our ignorance or to develop more knowledge, is a threefold part: inquiry, open-mindedness, and truth-seeking. This sounds very easy when I say, look, all you have to do is inquire, be open-minded, and seek the truth. But each of these comes with a built-in paradox. When it comes to inquiry, we hit the buffers with Meno's paradox. How can you inquire if you don't realize that you need to find out about something? I mean, there are a whole lot of things out there that I know nothing about, and I will probably continue for a very long time without bothering any of these things. So the question is, how do you find out about what you don't know you need to learn about? Now, some of this comes to us through the natural processes of life. You find yourself in a situation where you need to know something you don't know, and it's causing you a whole lot of problems. So you spend 20 minutes learning something, and then you sort out the problem, and you don't bother that lack of knowledge again. When it comes to open-mindedness, there's a paradox for that too. If you want to be technical about it, it's Moore's paradox. This is a suggestion that all of us are capable of recognizing that there have been times in the past when we've been wrong. And for most of us, we accept that there will be times going forward when we will be wrong. But it is almost impossible for your average human being to say, today I am wrong. And this is the open-mindedness that Socrates feels we need to recognize where we are wrong today and correct our wrongness. And not to say, oh well, that was yesterday and I know better today, or this will perhaps in some time in the future I may be wrong again. No, they're not letting you off on that. You have to face up to where you are wrong today. The third part of the Socratic path is truth-seeking. He feels that it's very important to seek the truth. But, of course, this is Socrates. There has to be a problem. I mean, it's not simple. Why would he make anything simple when he can make it all more interesting and convoluted for us? He said that truth-seeking is not just looking for the truth, but it's avoiding falseness. If you have the truth, to seek the truth, you have to avoid falsehood. And really, this is where Open Socrates is quite interesting. He said that this is something that none of us can do on our own. That if we're seeking the truth, it needs to be a two-person operation at least. One person is actively seeking the truth and saying, propose something that, say, this is true. Being in church on Sunday is a good idea. Having a teddy is a good idea. Reading books is a good idea. And then you have a dialogue with somebody who refutes everything you say. So you have one person who proposes truths and the other person refutes it. And that this is a way of coming to a better understanding of ourselves and our world. Agnes Callard is absolutely insistent that this is something that nobody can do on their own. We each have to have a companion. We have to have somebody who will refute for us, who will challenge us, who will tell us, no, no, you got it wrong there. I think this is one of the joys of living in a congregation like this. There are so many people who have refutations for quite a lot of the silly ideas and the not-so-silly ideas we have all been exposed to. And they will gently point out to all of us, me included, the error of our ways. It's wonderful. Now, in Tolstoy's case, he gets a smack from Professor Callard because she figures that he didn't actually investigate the questions enough. He just laid down in a sulk and didn't actually seek answers to the questions. He felt that he'd done enough when he just asked the questions. And he eventually found solace in religion. Now, his experiences with religion were somewhat mixed. He had a strong belief in God, but he didn't like the New Testament, so he wrote his own. And rewrote his own. So I think there has to be a balance in our lives between our toolkit for how we cope with the difficulties in life. There should be room for rational inquiry. But we should also perhaps recognize that there are situations where rational inquiry really doesn't do us enough. Maybe we need the supernatural. We need God in our lives, perhaps, but certainly we need people in our lives. And I think he was perhaps too dismissive of the Epicureans and the Stoics. If you don't look after your body, if your body is telling you, like, I'm hungry, I'm tired, it's very hard to have a good life. At the same time, if you spend your life sitting in a dusty library without contact with the rest of the world, our lives would become really rather unpleasant. I think perhaps for me, when the chips are down, the writer that gives me most hope comes back to Solzhenitsyn. I mean, Solzhenitsyn was just so clever. A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. Poor old Ivan Denisovich was in a terrible situation. He was having the worst day anyone could imagine. And yet, somehow, he found the courage, he found the spark. He was able to say, I'm not letting this get me down. I'm going to carry on. I'm going to get up and take another step forward. I'm going to live my life. What we need to do, perhaps, is to find ways that work for us in different situations. Socrates, by all means, follow the Socratic path. But don't feel that it will give you all the answers when maybe it won't. In the words of the old hymn, adventure boldly and explore. Amen.